Here to talk Browns with us is Scott Petrek, Browns beat reporter for the Chronicle-Telegram and Medina Gazette. You can also catch Scott's work at brownszone.com. Scott, as always, we appreciate the time, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
So far, so good. And we'll begin with the schedule discussion here, and then we'll transition into the draft a little bit later on. But as you take a look at the 2018 slate for the Browns, what would you say are some of the more intriguing aspects of the 2018 schedule?
You know what? I think the fact that they open again with Pittsburgh is interesting. You know, I mean, you're trying to – you're coming off 0-16. You're looking for a win as soon as you can get it. Obviously, we know how bad the Browns have been in openers. The only win since 99 is in 2004. So they start with at home against Pittsburgh. You know, and they almost beat them last year in the home opener. So, you know, I think that's interesting. And then they go to New Orleans, which is a tough game. And then they're back in prime time week three against the Jets, which is not only – it's always fun in prime time. It's a winnable game. You know, the Jets weren't very good last year. We don't know who's going to play quarterback for them. You know, and I thought, you know, there's nothing more than a two-game homestand, nothing more than a two-game road trip. So it seemed a fair schedule to me. You know, the bye is late in the season, which I think coaches like. So nothing crazy, but it's hard because they're playing the NFC South, and it's three playoff games.
Yeah, three. You're right, definitely. And that's an interesting division, too, just because it seems like that division flips every year. The teams that were at the bottom of that division one year seem to be at the top of it the next year, but it's just a very bizarre division. All right, we'll get into the draft now because I know that's at the top of everyone's mind. We're 6 days away from the first round of the draft. You had mentioned something earlier in the week about John Dorsey apparently having this dark period where he doesn't read any outside articles, he doesn't listen to anything on what he perceives as the outside. Are you buying that? Because this is coming from the same guy that says his phone lines are always open and he's always ready to make some kind of a deal.
Well, yeah, I don't think those things are necessarily, you know, exclusive of each other. I think that what he means most by that is he focuses on the film. So, you know, you get everything. You get the visits and you get the combine and the pro days. And then I think he comes back to Browns headquarters, locks himself in his office, and watches a ton of tape. And I think that's how it's supposed to be. And that's why he used to be a scout. And that's just what happens when that's your background. You go back to the film like you should. Now, yeah, if the Giants call and want to talk trade or Buffalo, he'll certainly listen to that. But I think when he's talking about noise, he means the rumors about guys moving up and down in the draft. And, you know, who's a hot guy or not. I think he says, you know what, forget that. I'm going to go back and see the film, and that's how I'm going to rank my board. And now you have to leave it open to the possibility it moves because of interviews and things like that. But it's going to be based on the film, and I think he kind of wants to get back to that after you have kind of the busy part of it, which is the combines and the visits and the pro days.
Scott, obviously the rumor is Browns are going to take a quarterback in the first round. Rumors have kind of flown out there, too. They could possibly trade down. New York Giants were suggested as a possible team to trade. But there's so many quarterbacks, it seems, in this draft. I mean, are all of them pretty good representations of what a good quarterback can be in the NFL? Do people believe that?
I think some people do. It's really split. You know, you talk to so many analysts this time of the year, you know, experts on the draft, and some feel it's not a great quarterback class. There's no kind of one guy, main guy, like you would have with your Andrew Luck.
Sure.
You know, that kind of guy. But having said that, I think that a lot of guys think it's a big-time class. You know, in my mind, there's four or five guys worth being taken in the first round, and that includes probably four guys that should be taken in the top 10-15, depending on how generous you are with a Baker Mayfield. So I think it's a worthy class. I think you're going to see a ton of quarterbacks go early. I don't expect the Browns to trade that number one pick. I think when you have it, and they've had the top two pick 3 years in a row, if they don't come out with the quarterback, I think that would be a terrible idea, and I think John Dorsey knows that, and I think he's going to take his favorite quarterback.
Sure. I'm curious. Tyrod Taylor, I know, was recently at camp. He spoke to the media. What are his thoughts as sort of being the guy coming into this with the idea that this team's still looking for a franchise guy there?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough spot, but I think he's used to it. And I think if you're getting paid $16 million this year, it makes it a little easier to digest that maybe somebody's being brought in to take your job. That's just the way it works. And, you know, the fact is, if Tyrod goes 11-5, the Browns will probably sign him again, and the rookie will sit on the bench another year. You know, it's not the easiest thing in the world, but I'll tell you what, from talking to Tyrod a couple times, he seems like he has a perfect makeup. I like how he's come in and led this team from the get-go. And that was missing. The veteran quarterback presence as a leader was missing last year, and I think the Browns found that in Tyrod.
The way this team's going, if he goes 11-5, they may have a parade for him.
I threw out a big number there. But
yeah,
I mean,
I got you.
The same's probably applicable at 10-6 or 9-7.
Yeah, that's statue territory at this point, no question about it. We're talking Browns with Scott Petrak of the Chronicle Telegram, Adana Gazette, and also BrownsZone.com. I wanted to get into something that you wrote and that you mentioned about a week ago. You mentioned that you had a conversation with Alabama head coach Nick Saban about Minkah Fitzpatrick, a guy that you'd certainly like to think would be in play for the Browns at 4. What were some of your major takeaways from that conversation?
Yeah, it was interesting. I always like talking to Coach Saban. You know, not a lot of people get to, and for some reason, you know, I got a connection down there that I've been able to talk to him the last several years, and I really appreciate it. You know, I thought it was interesting. Minkah had kind of fallen off the radar, and I don't know if it was just that's how the draft kind of season works, you know, there's waves, or if it's because, you know, the Browns traded for Demaryius Randall, and they plan on playing him at free safety. And then they signed a bunch of cornerbacks, so maybe the need isn't as great as it looked in, you know, in the beginning of March. However, when I talked to Saban, I just really couldn't get over how much he liked Minkah as a player, as a person, as a leader, as a culture changer. And that's what the Browns need. They need guys like that. And I came away thinking, you know, if he's available at 4, which he most – you know, I'm almost assured that he will be, I would have no problem with the Browns taking him, even if they don't have the spot picked out to play him right now, you know, because this roster is so early in its construction that I don't think you can be short-sighted on, man, he doesn't fit right this second. You know, look at a couple years down the road. Is there a chance he could play free safety? Yes. Can he be your number one corner? Yes. Can he play that slot position that keeps growing in importance in the league? Yes. So it came away thinking the Browns could do a lot worse than Minkah Fitzpatrick at number 4.
Well, Fitzpatrick's certainly one of those guys in play at 4. Who are some of the others? I mean, you always hear about Barkley. You hear about Chubb being at play at 4. Some people think Denzel Ward maybe as an outside possibility. But you mentioned, you know, it seems for now like the Browns have addressed a lot of their cornerback needs. Who are some of the other guys you think could be in play at number 4 if they stay there?
Well, I still think they need a number one corner, which is why I think Ward's in play, and I think Minkah is in play, assuming you think he can play number one corner. I think Chubb's the favorite right now. I don't think the Giants are going to take him at 2, although they could. I think the Giants are going to go quarterback or Barkley, which means the Browns could get their favorite quarterback at number 1 and then the best defense play in the draft at number 4 in Chubb, and that's a heck of a way to start for John Dorsey. So I think it's Chubb. I think it's Barkley if he happens to be there, although I still don't think the Browns are taking him at number 4. And I think it's Fitzpatrick and Ward. And then you can't rule out a trade. I think I expect Dorsey to stay at 4, but if he gets blown away, let's say by Buffalo, that's a popular team looking for a quarterback. If he gets blown away, I could see him making that move. Or even, like, let's say Denver wants to move up one spot from 5 to 4 to make sure they get their guy, I could see him making that move. And then, you know, they'd be chasing a quarterback, so you're not giving up anything to move down one spot.
Well, Scott, we'll cut you loose on this because I thought it was interesting. You brought this up when the Landry contract was structured and everybody looked at it. Some people said, that's a lot of money. Other people didn't seem to have much of a problem with it, but I want to give you a chance to explain this. The Browns actually have an easy out after a couple of years with this Jarvis Landry contract. If you could kind of expand on that and talk about the easy out after 2 years.
Yeah, first, I was fine with the deal. To me, it was just the only reason people questioned it was the timing of it. I think if they had signed him to the extension right after the trade, nobody would have blinked because that's the expectation when you trade for a guy in the last year of his deal is he's going to stay with you, you're going to sign him to an extension. And the out means, you know, the contract numbers that get floated are usually inflated because of the agent, and they're usually the most you can possibly make. So I believe it's $37 million he's guaranteed for the first 2 years, and then the Browns can cut him before the 3rd year. So if he doesn't perform, it's 2 and out, and if he performs, then you keep him at a reasonable salary. So I think they did what they needed to keep him, needed to make him happy, and the fact is they have all the salary cap money in the world. Why not spend some of it on a guy that's been so productive in his first 4 years I think it's a fine move.
Yeah, well, simply stated, simply put, no question about it, and certainly that's a guy they absolutely need because that wide receiver room has been pretty thin in recent years. Scott, we know you're slammed this time of the year. I know you're extraordinarily busy, so we always appreciate the time, my friend.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thank you. Scott Petrak with the Chronicle-Telegram, Medina Gazette, also BrownsZone.com. Check that out if you haven't already. If you're a fan of the Browns, sometimes the draft is the most exciting time of the year. And these are exciting times for the Cleveland Browns with all the draft picks that they've got. They'll be very, very busy, and that means Scott will be very busy, and that will make BrownsZone.com a pretty popular place in the coming weeks.